I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Rick, we tape the podcast early on Wednesday. We did the mailbag. I had a Lightning game Wednesday night, so we tape it early. And after we get done taping the show, I open up my computer, open up TweetDeck, and there's a tweet from Tom Jones congratulating you for winning not one, but two Associated Press Sports Editors Awards, one for beat writing and one for breaking news. And I know Tom addressed this last week on the podcast with you. But, man, you've had a hell of a season.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the Academy.
Let me hit the music.
For recognizing me. Why is that red light flashing in front of me? Well, listen, I'm going to thank my mom and my late dad. Do not start. I'm going to stand up here. I don't care what that red light says. No, seriously, it was quite an honor. I've won this before, but not twice in 1 year. That's rare. And certainly, you know, covering a team like the Buccaneers with as high a profile as they have doesn't hurt. But I think what was rewarding is that neither of these stories or a lot of this stuff didn't directly affect Tom Brady. Obviously, the beat writing is in part the coverage of the Bucs, and well, all of it is the coverage of the Bucs. But we know the Antonio Brown story got a lot of focus. I think Josh Lambeau, the story about the former Jaguars punter, and then, you know, some, I don't know, 12 hours later, they fired Urban Meyer. So they were impactful stories. You know, they were stories that resulted in a three-game suspensions for three Buccaneer players. You know, another log on the fire that ousted Urban Meyer. So when you're able to write, and fortunate enough in a year to write impactful stories like that, I think the judges and the other sports editors that read these entries, they certainly remember what the result of that reporting was. So yeah, it was. You know, I think as a paper, we won honorable mention for top 10 daily section. What's really cool is that even though our circulation has dropped, we only print now twice a week. We could have gone into a lower division based on circulation, but we stayed in the Class A division with the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Athletic. You know, large circulation. You know, type news industries and digital platforms and whatnot. And so it's, you know, what's cool is that, you know, you're going with the big boys, you know, you're having to compete. And we usually do very well with these. I mean, almost everybody on our staff has won at one time or another. So it was cool. I appreciate the editing that, you know, that went into it. You don't see behind the scenes, you know, with Tracy Johnson, our sports editor, with, Mark Catches, the editor of the newspaper. I think I've mentioned on this podcast, I spent for the first time like an hour with lawyers doing his story on Antonio Brown. So, yeah, it was an interesting and a very busy year and a lot of work. And it's always good, you know, to be recognized by your peers. And that's what this is, right? This is Associated Sports Press Editor.
Hey, look, you know, I've lived in many markets, and I say this in all sincerity. Tampa Bay sports fans are extremely lucky in this market to have the coverage of the beat writers in this town. You know, particularly, you know, your coverage of the Bucs, and you've been doing it for probably more years than you'd wish to admit.
Three decades, yeah. You know,
Mark Topkin, who's been covering the Rays before the Rays were even a team.
Before they were here, yeah.
You know, and the work he does, and countless others that in this town we are extremely lucky to have great beat writers covering our teams, and they don't always print the stories you want to read or you like to hear the news, you know, but as you know, we've tried to educate on this podcast and talk about that your job is not to root for a team or to root against a team. It's to report the news of the team, good, bad, whatever's going on. MRSA, fake vax cards, winning Super Bowls, You're signing Tom Brady, whatever the news of the team is, that's what your job is to cover and to report and as a beat writer and writer for the Tampa Bay Times. But this market is extremely lucky.
I appreciate that. I would agree that Mark does such a great job. We've had, I mean, myself and Mark have been here for the longest and on those two major beats. And so I think, you know, the longevity has its reward, has its curse too. But I think that, you know, we've been fortunate as a staff to have some senior people with institutional knowledge of those franchises. So, well, enough of that. Enough of me. Let's talk about everybody else. First, we finally made it to the weekend. This is it. This is the 18th annual Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg presented by RP Funding. It's happening now, February 25th through the 27th. That starts today, folks. Runs through the weekend, of course. Go see that beautiful 1.8-mile, 14-turn configuration of a track that runs through the streets circling Pioneer Park, the Duke Energy Center for the Arts, the Dalley Museum, and extends all the way onto the runways at Albert Woodard Airport. The grandstand's out there. Get some tickets, walk the paddocks, talk to the drivers, all of that. If you want some race information and information about tickets, go to gpstpete.com. That's gpstpete.com. We had so many mailbag questions we didn't get to yesterday. We're going to complete those. But first, I kind of want to revisit, like, maybe I wasn't clear enough when I talked about the story I wrote the other day about Blaine Gabbert. Maybe I was. I don't know. But I'm going to revisit just where the Bucs quarterback situation sits today. Because, and this is going to continue on until or unless the Bucs do something with the position, right? Like right now, Kyle Trask is literally the only quarterback under contract. And we know they're not going into the season saying Kyle Trask is their starter, much less with one quarterback, right? You got to have three or four to go to training camp. So they're going to sign some guys. And I think it's safe to assume that one of those guys they're going to re-sign is Blaine Gabbert simply because he knows the system. Even if he becomes the backup to, you know, if they're lucky enough to pry a veteran starter out of another situation, they want Blaine back. No, I think it'll be a highly, you know, incentivized type contract performance if he ends up starting, those sorts of things, but not something that's hard to do for a guy that's 32 years old. So I think we can count those two guys among the quarterbacks that the Bucs will have in 2022. Beyond that, though, you know, I just want you to know that everything can change, and it can change quickly, right? However, as we sit here today, like I would just ask people to think, and there's a lot of talk about, well, I think they're going to get Russell Wilson or they're going to get Deshaun Watson. I wrote in the story the other day, and I want to emphasize this. When you ask about Deshaun Watson in the Bucs, and look, he's got 22 civil cases and 10 criminal complaints. They postponed some of the discovery on that. I don't know that his situation, even from a criminal standpoint, let's address that first. That might not be cleared up until the draft or right around the draft at the earliest. So I read a story in Pro Football Talk today that several teams have just decided, well, you know, whether it's solved or not, we want them, and we're willing to pay the price. Okay, that might be what teams have to do. Teams might have to just kind of hold their breath and say, we're going to give up a ton of compensation and hope that at some point his problems will be behind him and he's 26 and we will have a hell of a quarterback for the next 6 to 8 to 10 years. That's probably what is going to happen, to be honest with you, because there's so many teams that need quarterbacks. There's 12 to 14 teams right now you could say we're looking for a starting quarterback. So if you go on that assumption that, look, somebody's going to take the plunge, right, then you look at the Bucs, and I just want people to know, I've asked this question, okay, about Deshaun Watson, and what I was told, and it's not important who told me, it's just, you know, you'll have to trust me, it was somebody that is in a position to know or needs to know. What I was told is, I don't think the owners are going to sign off on that. Now, that's, it's their business to ask the owners, because that's an ownership decision, right? Because we always say, have the press conference. Ladies and gentlemen, our new quarterback, Deshaun Watson from the Houston Texans. Hey, everybody, you know, claps it up in the organization. And then first question, Rick Stroud. Yeah, Deshaun, can you tell us why you weren't able to play a single game last year, and exactly what is your problem with the 22 alleged sexual assault complaints. When you go to these massage parlors, like, what is your expectation? Why did you, like, how is that press conference going, right? Question after question about his legal entanglements, about his habits, about the kind of a, it's kind of a creepy thing, right? I mean, what's alleged. And so we're gonna pepper him, the organization, Jason Light, Bruce Arians, about, well, how do you know when you're going to be cleared to play? You know, do you think you'll face criminal complaints? Do you think you'll go to jail? Are you worried about going to jail? I mean, that's your new quarter. That's the face of your franchise, okay, on that day. If those things aren't resolved, and in his favor, I might add, that's your press conference. Okay, somebody's going to have it. Somebody, I firmly believe that Mike Florio knows what he's talking about, and that some team will just say, you know what, we don't care. We'll ride it out. Whatever trouble he's in, we will ride it out because we're going to get a hell of a quarterback. And ultimately, their fan base may not care either. The Bucks care. I'm just telling you, the Glazer family cares. And if I'm told they're not going to sign off on him, then that means they're not going to sign off on him. I don't know how else to say it. I don't think Deshaun Watson's in play here. Now, if something changes where 22 people withdraw their complaint and say, you know what, no harm, no foul, that would mostly mean that, you know, he settled with him civilly, as did Jameis Winston coming out of college, right? As did Jameis Winston with the Uber driver. That was okay with them. If all that's resolved and there's no charges pending against him, maybe that changes the Glazers' mind. I don't know, right? That this story could evolve. But as we sit here today, I think it's too icky for them. I really do. I don't know how Darcy is. Darcy Glazer going to that press conference? You know, with all the work she's done for women in sports, women in football, women. I mean, what are we talking about? Are they comfortable with Deshaun Watson and a female trainer? I mean, these are the questions we're going to ask them. So I don't see that happening. Okay, and the reason I don't see it happening is because they don't see it happening. So we can keep talking about Deshaun Watson on the radio and everywhere else, and we'll talk about him at times too, an updated situation. But I just don't think it's realistic. Russell Wilson, let's keep talking about, oh, Russell Wilson, wouldn't he be great in this offense? Wouldn't he? Yeah, deep ball. Oh, pedigree. He's still got 3, 4, 5 years left on. I'd give up 3 number one picks. Great. That's fantastic. Why would Seattle do it? Why would Seattle do it? So the Seattle Seahawks with 70-year-old Pete Carroll. Let's change it. Okay, let's give Bruce Arians the Seattle job. You're Bruce Arians, and I'm covering the Seahawks. And they didn't win last year. Hell, they haven't really won in the last 2 years. And so I'm calling Bruce Arians as a writer, and I'm saying, hey, I know you guys haven't won, and you don't have a first-round pick. Wouldn't you love to trade Russell Wilson and get all these drafts? You could probably get 3 number ones, a number two, a number three, something like that. You get 5 draft picks. You know what 70-year-old, soon-to-be 70-year-old Bruce Arians would say? That's awesome, Rick. Who's my quarterback? I'm taking a guy in the draft. You think I'm going to develop a rookie next year? By the way, not the best draft class for quarterbacks this year, okay? Just isn't. There'll be probably 3 drafted in the first round, and maybe 1 in the top 10. Who knows? Maybe 2, because of the value of the position. They're not starting quarterbacks as rookies, these guys.
And that first round draft pick you're getting from the Bucs is what, 27, 28?
It's 27. That's right. That's the other part. Hey, you know what, Bruce? Here's the thing. There's a team in Tampa, and they will take Russell Wilson, and the first pick you get from them is 27th. Right? If I was inclined to trade him, and Philadelphia called, and they have 3 first-rounders in the top 16, maybe I listen. But here again, what's my plan? When's the next time I'm competitive in the NFC West? When's the next time I can go up against San Francisco, and granted they have a young quarterback but a really good team, the Rams, who just won the Super Bowl and have a really good team, Arizona, who has a young quarterback, albeit disgruntled, but potential for a really good team. Which year am I going to be able to go toe-to-toe with those guys and win the division? How long is that? 3 years? 5 years? With one of these rookie quarterbacks I'm going to draft, and I'm going to lose, 12 games next season?
And I'm doing this because why? Because that other team wants Russell Wilson? Well, I want Russell Wilson. I want to win too. I've got a Super Bowl quarterback. I got a guy that's going to the Hall of Fame. How about this? How about we just build around the cat? How about we get in there and get some free agents and use whatever draft capital we have, even though we made a bad deal and we don't have a first rounder? But how about we do some things to build up our football team? Because we know on a good football team, Russell Wilson can win. He's been to Super Bowl twice for us. He's won one of them. I just don't know why people think, because a year ago, Russell Wilson made noise about wanting some things around him, and he was talking about the offensive line. And he was willing to waive his no-trade clause if it came to that for certain teams, right? And so that became a big story. Well, Russell Wilson went to the Super Bowl, and he said, I don't want to leave Seattle. Now, he might be posturing, but he goes, I want to win three more Super Bowls here. I'm a Seahawk, you know? So, and look, he could get traded tomorrow. I have no idea. I don't know what the Seahawks are thinking. But if you think like Pete Carroll, who's still their coach, because if they went to Pete Carroll and they said, hey, Pete, you're going to be 70. We're starting over with a young quarterback. We don't know who it is. We're going to take three number ones, maybe Jalen Hurts, maybe somebody like that. So I'm going to go to Philadelphia. They're going to give me Jalen Hurts and three number ones. And so I went from Russell Wilson to Jalen Hurts. Am I better? Am I better in 2 years? Am I better in 3 years? No. Jalen Hurts is not going to be Russell Wilson. Let's be honest. And I like Jalen Hurts, but I don't like him that much. So people play fantasy football this time of year. Not to mention, let's say he is traded. Okay, there's like 12 teams that want a quarterback, 12 to 14. Most of them have better draft picks than the Bucs. Nearly all of them. I mean, they're picking 27th. So we're talking apples to apples. Okay, you get a first-round pick from me, I'm picking in the top 10. I'm picking in the top 5. Who are you trading with? Okay? So it's very remote. And the Bucs know this. This is not 2020. This is not the year when Tom Brady, Philip Rivers, Teddy Bridgewater, coming off a 5-0 season with the Saints, Carson Wentz, or you could have gotten him probably. All these guys were available, right? And most of them were free agents. You didn't have to give up anything for them. You just had to sign them. They got to choose where they were going. So, I mean, it's just not that year, right? So when you write about, and by the way, I asked. Okay, it wasn't like, Bruce didn't call me and say, hey, let me make a case for Blaine Gabbert. Like, it doesn't work that way. I heard today on one of the stations, somebody said, oh, I think that Bruce is just trying to show that he's dealing from strength, that he's not desperate. That's why he said what he said to the Times. No, he said what he said to the Times because I asked him. He didn't call me up and volunteer, hey, let me make a case for Blaine Gabbert so that everybody thinks that we're okay there. He made the same case a year ago when Tom Brady was on the team. He has been behind Blaine Gabbert more than anybody has been behind Blaine Gabbert, which is why he's, you know, was here for 2 years. He had him in Arizona. He went like 2-3, I think in 2018 or 17 for him, 2017, I guess. And he beat a good Jacksonville team that went 10-6. He beat a pretty good Tennessee team that was like 9-7. And then, you know, Gabbert had like 8 different offenses and head coaches in about his first 8 seasons. And, you know, he was a top 10 pick of Jacksonville. Didn't work out. But now he's 32 years old or 33. And he has sat like everybody else behind Tom Brady for the last 2 years. He taught Tom Brady this offense. He was the guy as much as anybody who started, you know, helping him. So at the end of the day, all I'm saying is, yes, the most likely scenario, and I think this is going to be the case throughout the offseason, the most likely scenario for the Bucs is that Kyle Trask comes back, Blaine Gabbert comes back, somebody in the second tier of free agents signs. Like a Teddy Bridgewater. Don't know if it's going to be Teddy Bridgewater. Like a Teddy Bridgewater. Somebody in that second tier signs as a free agent, not as a draft, not as a trade, but as a free agent. And they compete with Gabbert and Trask to see who wins the job. And meanwhile, you develop. Here's the thing I think people are missing a little bit too. They know that Kyle Trask isn't ready
They're not like, it's not a situation where, well, we drafted this guy. It's not like San Francisco, right? San Francisco has Garoppolo and they have Kyle Trask. Oh, by the way, and if I didn't mention this already, they don't like Jimmy Garoppolo, okay? That's not changing either. So we can drop the Jimmy Garoppolo talk. It's not happening. If they got Jimmy Garoppolo, I was told, yeah, we'd have to run it 40 times a game. He'd be fine. That's not what they do, and that's not what they want to do. So Jimmy Garoppolo is not an option for them. And Carson Wentz, to them, Carson Wentz is not an upgrade. Think about that. They don't think Carson Wentz is an upgrade on what they have with Gabbert and Trask. So they like Kyle Trask. They took him in the end of the second round. They want him to continue to develop. They don't really know what they have because he hasn't been out there. But they liked him enough a year ago to do this very thing. We're going to put him behind Brady. We're going to let him learn behind the GOAT. We're going to let him have a red shirt year. He didn't dress a single game. Now he's going to come in and he's going to compete. So this is the plan, okay? If somebody shows up that's better, then I think, obviously, they would jump all over it. You know, if they can make a deal for Russ Wilson, heck yeah. I just don't think it's – I think it's fantasy football. So that's my take. And look, people got three-hour radio shows, and I've got a, you know, podcast every night, and we're going to talk about the Bucs quarterback situation, but I don't see it changing dramatically over the next few weeks. We'll see what happens with Deshaun Watson's case. You know, but he's got civil litigation, so he's got to settle, right? Those folks aren't, they're represented by the same lawyer. They're not going away, okay? So if he doesn't settle, then there's depositions and there's actual court cases. There's going to be depositions for him for his criminal case. What he has to say in those depositions isn't going to be icky. It's not going to be great. Same thing with his accusers. So I'm always... I'm entertained, but I'm not. I also think there's just a lot of like doubters out there that you have to believe that, you know, Arians knows his situation, right? He knows it better than anybody. He came back to coach again. He could have said, you know what? I don't have Tom Brady. I'm done. Oh, by the way, we'll talk about Tom Brady's movie too. By the way, if they don't sign another quarterback, you know who could come back if he decided to? Tom Brady. If they don't get Russ Wilson or they don't trade a pile of draft picks for Deshaun Watson, if they don't get Russell Wilson, nothing would stop them from signing for Tom Brady coming back in here because he's going to be under contract. Or he won't be under contract, but they'll have his rights. Basically, he goes on the reserve retire list after June 1st. So there's that. Speaking of Brady, and this is then we'll get to your questions. you want to know... And this is the other thing. Like, you really don't think Tom Brady... Well, here's the thing. He's going to be playing football in the spring, not for the USFL. He's going to be wearing a Patriots uniform. But he is the starring himself, as himself, and the producer of a movie called, 80 for Brady? Something like that?
I thought that was the age that Brady was retiring at.
Very good. 80 for Brady. And basically... He's going to play himself. It's a story based loosely, I guess, on a true story where these four women who are big fans of him, it's kind of a road movie where they make their way to the Super Bowl, 51, I think, which was the one in Houston where he came back from 28-3 and beat Atlanta. So, and it stars... like Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, Sally Field, and Rita Moreno. And so the joke is, of course, basically that Brady isn't retired. He's now just working 9-to-5. Ba-dum-bum. So, yeah, I think he's going to spend some time making that movie, and it's going to take him a while to do that. Now, the good news is that he'll keep his arm loose. He'll be out there throwing the ball, you know, doing the scenes of reenacting the Super Bowl. But
will Antonio Brown play one of the receivers? Or
yes, exactly. He's going to play Julian Edelman, I think. I bet Jules is in that thing, too. He's going to get, you know, there's going to be. Here's what I want to know.
Amendola, you're going to have Jules. You're going to have Gronk.
Jules. James White.
Gronk, who's at the Lightning game on Wednesday night.
I saw that. He's still in town, which is cool.
Kevin Kiermaier was there as well.
Yeah, with his kid, which was neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I want to know is Tom Brady tired of doing movies about Tom Brady? Like, when does that happen? When does Tom Brady say, I'm not going to play myself, I'm actually going to do another movie that doesn't involve me?
Does he have because the acting chops to do that?
I don't know, but like, you know, it's not really acting if you're just playing yourself. Like at some point, we had Man in the Arena, you know, there was one before that. Now we have 80 for Brady or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see him as the actor type though.
He was in Ted 2. I thought that was the best job he did.
Yeah, but he was playing himself. I mean,
again, that's all. I mean, he can only play Tom Brady. Like, it's kind of like Tom Cruise. You know, you see him in A Few Good Men. You see him in, you know, all the movies that he's Top Gun and all this stuff. And it's still Tom Cruise, right? But you go, okay, he's a different character. I get it. But like, could Tom Brady actually play somebody other than Tom Brady? We don't know. But it's not acting if you're just going to keep doing movies. Like, at some point, somebody's going to say, hey, Tom, I got a great idea. Oh, yeah, what's that? I got a movie idea where you play you. You're the quarterback of the Patriots. Oh, that's new. Haven't done that before. No, really, this is going to be great. I just at some point you just wonder, like, hey, man, this isn't acting, you know. But those women are funny and you know they're a little elderly, so it's going to be a interesting dynamic. But yeah, I would do a movie. My movie would not be called 80 for Brady if it was based on that Super Bowl. It'd be called Blankety Blank Brady, because I remember that Super Bowl unfondly as I had three stories on my computer and didn't know where I was going. First, Atlanta was going to obliterate them 28-3, and I'm writing how this is how the dynasty ends, this is how you take the crown off the head of the, you know, all that stuff was he's laying there on the turf and they're running the pick six back. Then it was, oh, well, you know, heart of a champion, they fought their tails off down 28-3, fell just short, but Atlanta, you know, and then it became, you better win this game, Tom Brady. Like, I'm all in on you winning this game on deadline at 1 o'clock in the morning. And fortunately, they got the coin toss in overtime, and you knew it was going to happen. But, yeah, that was not a 9-to-5 job for me that day. But it was a hell of a Super Bowl, and his great, really his greatest moment, I think, of his career. I mean, all, you know, Tampa notwithstanding, I mean, that was a second chapter. But, you know, the greatest comeback of all time in a Super Bowl, that was amazing. Okay, so one more time, just a reminder that the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, sponsored by RP Funding this year, is going on starting today. It's the 18th annual Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete, as a matter of fact. And you can visit gpstpete.com for race information and tickets. It's just another racing season that's starting right here in St. Petersburg.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And after you go to the race Saturday, you can then watch the Stadium Series where the Lightning playing in their first ever outdoor game Saturday night at 7:30.
That's going to be so neat. I saw the weather is supposed to be a little rainy over the weekend, not for the game. 30 degrees, I think they're expecting.
Yeah, I think a high of 45 on Saturday, but the low is going to be upper 20s. So game time probably, yeah, low to mid 30s.
Yeah, which will be neat. I wanted to go to this. We ended up not going, obviously, but I love the Stadium Series. Let me tell you, the other night, so I'm watching this game. Man, that was that Edmonton game and Connor McDavid, that was one of the best games of the season. Now, the Lightning ended up going up 4-1 at one point, but they did not stop. The Oilers were, they dominated the first period, actually, but it was 2-1 and then 4-1, and you're thinking, okay, this one's over. It wasn't. That was both those teams, man, got up and down the ice. That was a fun game to watch. Maybe the best game of the year that I watched.
It's the first time since 2018 that we've gotten to see Connor McDavid here at Amalie Arena, based on the last two seasons and scheduling, and he was hurt in 2019 when they came here. I mean, you see the highlights of him. Maybe you watch a game or two here and there. But to see him in person, just incredible. What he does. We're spoiled here to see players like Brayden Point and Nikita Kucherov, who are probably two of the top 10 players in the world.
Yep.
And you know, Brayden Point, how quickly he can play and move with the puck, and Nikita Kucherov, the way he sees the ice. But Connor McDavid plays at a different pace still, even more than Brayden Point. And you know, Brayden Point's a top 10 player in the world, no question about it. But Connor McDavid is just, it's incredible to watch him play. And to see it in person. And when he and Draisaitl are on the ice together, a lot of times on the power play, but last night, particularly in the third period, they had him on a line together pretty much the whole third period on Wednesday night. And the way, and Draisaitl's maybe a top 10 player in the world as well. You could make an argument he's top five. Those two together, it's incredible. When Point and Kucherov are playing their best and making plays all over the ice, that's McDavid and Draisaitl, and it's just, it's fun to watch. You know, I mean, the Lightning were able to win, and you wonder how Edmonton is struggling this season. And granted, they made a coaching change; they've been playing better since then. But they had a stretch; they went 2-11-2 with those guys on the team.
It's goaltending.
A lot of it is, absolutely. I mean, you know,
if they had a mid to upper level goaltender, they would be impossible to beat. I mean, they're so good. Here's what I noticed. You tell me if I'm right about McDavid, because I obviously don't cover hockey. I don't play it. I watch it, and I watched it from TV. I would have loved to have been there, though. This is what I noticed about him. You never realize he has his puck. He has the puck looks like it's attached to his stick. Mm-hmm. Like usually, you see guys, you know, backhand, forehand, up the ice, around the net. But I'm telling you, he pushes this thing around like it's attached to his stick. I've never seen anything like it. It follows him around. And I know no one makes it look that easy. He does. Like, wherever the puck is, bouncing, rolling, whatever, if he gets near it, it is attached to him. Mm-hmm. And he can skate anywhere he wants to with it. And it's just weird. It's in the speed that he plays with, everybody else is kind of standing still, and they're not, because it was a fast game. Both teams were very fast. But he is just totally at a different speed, and it's his ability to handle the puck is ridiculous.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It looks like it's attached to a stick at the highest rate of speed possible in hockey.
Right,
I mean,
right.
He's probably the fastest player in hockey, or if not, he's right up there. And it's beautiful to watch. I mean, you know, even if you're rooting against him, enjoy watching that, because it's special. I mean,
it's like a joystick. Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's the best player in the world. He's past Sidney Crosby at this point. Sidney Crosby's still a hell of a player, but he's getting up in age, and not all the skills are, you know, at peak what they were a few years ago. Connor McDavid's the best player in the world, no question about it.
Yeah, and you could tell. I think they said like the top five scorers in the NHL were on that ice at one time. Yesterday, I think.
Probably between McDavid, Draisaitl, Kucherov, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then what's the other thing I was going to mention? Well, just look, the Lightning having been off as long as they were, you kind of would expect a little bit of rust, maybe not as crisp with passes and things like that. Well, I'll say this. They had some fresh legs. Those guys were flying out there, man. You could tell they were well rested, because both teams were really skating, and that was just a fun game.
Well, they need that rest, as after Saturday they played in the Stadium Series, which will be a blast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm lucky enough I'll get to be there, so we'll talk about
that's
it next week
so
on the
cool,
podcast.
Yeah.
But then starting Tuesday they come home to play Ottawa. Their final 31 games are played in 60 days.
Oh my gosh!
So essentially every other day. Whew. Actually, they'll have games more often than they don't for the next 2 months.
Wow.
Once they return to Amalie on Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, injuries are going to be a big story. You know, when you play that much that soon without the rest in between, they're going to have to find ways to stay healthy. And that's when the injuries usually occur, when you have, you know, very little time to heal up those bruises and things like that. So, but they're playing well, man. They, you know, they're going to be a tough out again, and I don't know, you know, Florida might be the best team, or, you know, we can argue who is, but as long as their goaltending holds up the way it is, And they have Kucherov and they have Point and you know, Cirelli and some of those guys. Cirelli was really good, too, the other night. They're going to be in it. And Stamkos, of course, scored again. So it's been fun to watch them for sure. All right, we've got some mailbag questions we didn't have a chance to get to, so let's answer those.
Well, we'll go back to the Bucks, and Greg had tweeted us. If people consider that if the Bucks send multiple picks for a veteran quarterback, they would have to strike gold in free agency to fill many of the holes the team has. The advantage of keeping draft picks is you control younger players for 4 to 5 years. It seems to me that Blaine Gabbert allows his team to build through the draft, and then they can use 2022 to see what options they have at quarterback. If Gabbert does well, they have their quarterback. If he fails, they probably turn to Trask, and with a mid-round pick in 2023, they may be able to draft a better quarterback.
Yeah, they're kind of – that's exactly where they're at. I think that's a good analysis in terms of where they sit right now. Look, you can look at draft capital a lot of different ways, okay? It's – even for any first-rounder, I think that there's a 50% bust rate. And you know, I think more and more – I think the Rams – sort of proved this. I think the Bucks did a little bit at times too, is that you're willing to forfeit high draft picks for a known commodity. If you're getting a superstar, if you're getting, you know, a Tom Brady, obviously, or you're getting a Russell Wilson, you're getting somebody that's established, an Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford, right, who went to the Rams. And the Rams also gave up a 2 and a 3 last year just to rent Von Miller. But you know what? They won a Super Bowl. Look, the goal is to win a Super Bowl. Now, you want to build a team that's in it every year. You want to build a team that has lasting staying power, right? Because it's tough to go the free agent route. You wind up paying a lot of money. You know, some guys, you know, the free agent doesn't always work either. So you could have some dead money going forward. And so there's cap ramifications to that to try to buy a team. But I think if you're getting a known commodity like a Matthew Stafford, look, teams that don't have quarterbacks might spend 4 or 5 years trying to develop one that doesn't make it. And the large part, the reason why they don't make it is they're on bad football teams. If you're Trevor Lawrence or you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're geeked up about Trevor Lawrence because you had the number one pick and he was supposed to be a generational talent. Now Urban Meyer wasted a year and now he's got to learn a whole new offense under Doug Peterson and all of that. But at the end of the day, Trevor Lawrence is a talent with no talent around him. But the problem is, without that supporting cast, those quarterbacks fall down, you know? Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons Brady came here was Jason Light and John Spytek had done a good job of building this team regardless of who the quarterback was. It had been Jameis for 5 years, but you had Mike Evans, you had Chris Godwin, mm-hmm. you had a pretty good offensive line. You know, you had players that on defense, young secondary that was productive. You had Devin White, you still had Levante David, you brought in Sue, you drafted Vita Vea, and like those are first round picks, you know, Vita Vea and all them. So I think you have to, you do want players that you're going to be in control of for 4 or 5 years because you can't buy free agents every single year. So I don't think it's a bad way to go. Now the problem is, if you go out there with Blaine Gabbert and or Trask and you win about 6 or 7 games. You're still not picking high enough the next year to guarantee yourself the top quarterback. So it's sort of like when you're in the middle, it's a bad place, right? You either want to go young and develop or you want to, you know, go with a veteran and hope you win enough games to make the playoffs and go deep. And the Bucks are kind of caught in the place where you don't want to be in the NFL. Again, that's just where they are.
And they're caught there because they have enough talent to win a Super Bowl.
Correct.
And so it's not like, you know, we can make the playoffs, but we're not good enough to win it all.
Right.
Right now, if you look at the team, they're capable of winning the Super Bowl if they can find a quarterback that can play well enough.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Blaine Gabbert or somebody else, or Kyle Trask or somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at that defense, it can win. You've got Mike Evans, assuming you re-sign Chris Godwin. You know, I mean, you've got weapons. You've got pieces. You've got, I mean, you know, they always talk about that window, the championship window that teams have. And, you know, you're trying to be competitive every year, but there are years you have a better shot or windows. They're in a window they have a shot to win it all again. I mean, they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Last year, they, a great comeback and should have forced overtime in the divisional playoff round. And then you don't know what happens. I mean, they have the talent. So it's tough to, it's tough as an organization to just go, well, it's time to just go young. We're not going to try to trade or do anything and just see what we have. That's a tough thing to do as an organization. It may be the right thing based on the options out there. If you can't get Russell Wilson, if you can't get Aaron Rodgers, if you're not willing to sign or trade for Deshaun Watson, you know, It may be the best option, but it's definitely not one you're just going, well, this is the option we're taking. We're not going to look at anything else, because you're in a window where you could win. I mean, if you try to go young and wait for another year to draft a quarterback and then bring him along, you're probably 3-4 years away from a win. Well, then Mike Evans is out of his prime, and
that's right.
You know, Levante David's not here anymore, and you know, because he's, you know, older and moved on, and you know, you start going through that. How does that team look completely different when you're in a window?
Right. No, those are all good points. As we're doing this podcast, breaking news. Diana Russini, ESPN. Aaron Rodgers will be informing the Packers of his decision soon, per league sources. I'm told there are multiple teams with offers on the table, but of course nothing can happen until the Green Bay Packers allow a trade. That also comes on the heels of some other reports that that their GM, Brian Gutten, was it Gutenkunst? Is that how you pronounce his name? That he had told reporters that he never promised to trade Aaron Rodgers. So I think we're all under the assumption that when he came back last year, that there was sort of a promise that Rodgers could move on, you know, after the 2020-21 season. And basically the Packers GM saying, nope, I never made that deal.
You're never promising it. You may say, I'll entertain it.
We'll look at it. Yeah.
If it makes sense for the organization.
And if you think about it, the Packers got to do one of two things, in my opinion. You either keep Rodgers and try to sign him to a 2-year contract, you know, $100 million, whatever, because he's a free agent and you get nothing after this year, right? So you can keep him for the 2022 season. He walks as a free agent a year from now. Or you can trade him a year early and say, let's turn to the kid, you know, get as many draft picks as we can now because we don't have control over him after next season. Mm-hmm. So it's really what's best for the organization.
And well, how much faith do they have in Jordan Love?
Right, exactly. That's the other thing.
What quarterback are you getting back in return, depending on who you trade him to?
Yeah, and the thing about Jordan Love is, I would just say this: you don't know what you have until you allow him to play. I mean, there was a time when Brett Favre could still play. Mm-hmm. He was older, and whatnot, but they had to turn Aaron Rodgers sat on the bench for 3 years. They had to find out what they had. They thought they knew what they had, and they saw him in practice, but you would never really know, right?
Well, I don't mean but I mean, you know, look, we know the Bucs at this point don't believe Kyle Trask is going to be the starting quarterback.
Right. That's true. That's true.
I mean, not to say that they don't believe in him and don't think he's going to develop into one. He's not ready yet.
The Packers know a little more about Jordan Love, yeah.
What do they think of Jordan Love? Do they think he's ready? Can he step in and do it? I mean, there's always that risk of it. There's never a known quantity
until they play. Yeah,
but what you see in practice is a pretty good. Mm-hmm. Are we comfortable with it? Do we think he's set up to succeed? You know, is that the right scenario for him? And that's what, you know, they know that.
And he played a game last year when Aaron was, you know, the COVID situation, and he didn't play well and he lost. I don't know if you can judge him on that or not, but I feel like, all the posturing aside, I really feel like Aaron Rodgers is going to sign a $100 million deal for 2 years and stay in Green Bay. They've been making cap room. They've been renegotiating a bunch of contracts to create cap space. I just think that's what they're going to do. I don't see him. And if he is traded, if the Bucs are one of those teams with trades on the table, folks, he's not being traded to the NFC. Just not. Because you know the other team that has a trade on the table? The Denver Broncos. Promise you they do. And he can go join his former quarterbacks coach out there. And there'll be others for sure. But I think you'd be more likely to go to an AFC team.
Yeah, I think to go to the NFC, it's got to be one that just knocks your socks off. It's so much better than anybody else is offering.
Exactly right.
And when your top pick is 27 or 28, whatever the Bucks are, it's tough to come up with a package that's going to be that blow other teams away.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right, on to the questions again.
All right, Kyle asks, have we seen the last of O.J. Howard as a Buccaneer?
I think so. There's no absolutes in this game, right? But at minimum, if I'm O.J. Howard and they picked up my fifth-year option and I barely got on the field. Now, that was because Gronkowski, even though he missed six or seven games, he played a lot of football. He's their number one tight end. When they wanted to use two tight ends and one as a receiver, they trusted Cameron Brate more than they did O.J. Howard. But the Bucs, is undeniable, the Bucs don't think much of O.J. Howard. He didn't force his way onto the field. Arians has had him now for several years in his offense. Arians' offense, by the way, doesn't make great use of the tight end. Tom Brady did. But in general, schematically, they don't use the tight end as a receiver very much. I think O.J. is going to move on, and I think that there will be a team that would have liked him a whole lot coming out of Alabama that will see some tape, even when he was with the Bucs, that they'll, think he's much better than any tight end they have. And I think he'll sign a decent sized deal. It won't be anything that'll, set the market or anything, but I think he'll get an opportunity to start elsewhere. There's a lot of rebuilding teams out there, man. There's a lot of Jacksonville's. There's a lot of, Detroit Lions. There's a lot of, he can help somebody. And it'll be a restart to his career, probably be good for him. Another year away from the Achilles injury, which I think was a factor yet last season. But if you're the Bucs, you've had 5 years to evaluate O.J. Howard. And the evaluation is that he didn't play very much. And when he did, he got hurt more often than you'd like. It's nobody's fault, but it happened. And you wonder how much that Achilles has affected his mobility. He's never really become a great blocker. He certainly was able to run back in the day. I don't know what his speed is now post-injury. So I think they'll move on. Right now, they really don't have any tight ends. That's going to be a spot to watch in the draft, in free agency. I expect any day now, really, that Rob Gronkowski will retire. I don't think he's going to play. Unless he plays for Joe Burrow, his new man crush, but I don't think he's going to play, and he's a free agent. So that should be coming before the start of free agency. But, I think we've seen the last of O.J., and it's too bad because I love the guy. It matters to him. Football matters to him. He had it taken away from him, and then it really mattered to him. But it just didn't work out, in this offense with Gronk, with Brady. Brady invested time in him, but, he's still a guy that has pedigree, and it only takes one team to say, he's a lot better than the guys we have right now on our roster. And I think you'll get a chance to start.
All right, we've got several more questions. We'll carry some over to Monday or Tuesday next week, including some on Bucks free agency, some on the Lightning. But we'll end on this one today. Brian had asked, what will you miss most if the Major League Baseball season is canceled?
Good Lord, everything. Where do I start? You and I are probably bigger baseball fans than some people that listen to this podcast, Steve, but I think the great thing about baseball is that it is a six-month season, that from late March, early April, all the way through October, you ride the roller coaster with these guys. It's a marathon, and you wake up, and if you didn't see the game, you want to see the box score, or you want to watch the replays, or you want to watch the highlights. Baseball is a day-to-day lifestyle for me, I know there might still be hockey on, or there might be spring football or something like that. I want to know that there's a game on almost every day. And, and for that matter, if you stay up late, you can watch a game at 10:30 at night from the West Coast. So and I don't think it's going to come to that, by the way. I think they're getting closer in terms of negotiating like average salary. I don't think the players were going to want to forfeit game checks. And start the season late, and we're quickly approaching that deadline.
Next week.
But there's nothing like the Fall Classic. There's nothing like a pennant race in September and in October baseball. And, the Rays are obviously American League champions. They have a young roster. They have dynamic players on their roster, young dynamic players. They've got to improve their pitching. But we know what a great organization they are, and I just love the battle every week, every game. It's just, if you're a baseball fan, you just don't live it sometimes, unless you're a bandwagoner or you're somebody that just hops on it in October for the Fall Classic. But to me, it would be deafening silence, if you will. Like there would just wouldn't you wouldn't feel like a major league city, you know? And they had this before where they didn't play the World Series 1 year, and that was ridiculous. But to have a whole season wiped out or something like that, or, you know, after 2 years of COVID, people not being able to go to the games, some people going to the games, attendance down because of the fear of COVID, all this stuff. I mean, this is a year where you would feel pretty confident in not just the team, but also, you know, watching a lot of games. I don't know where to begin on that question.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of that soundtrack to summer. I mean, I love...
There you go.
I love having baseball games on while I'm doing work. I mean, you know,
yeah.
During the day, you'll have, you know, the Cubs will be playing on a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah.
At, you know, 2:30 in the afternoon, and you have that game on as you're doing work. I mean, you're not necessarily watching every pitch of it, but it's that background noise and all the way through, you know, 1 a.m. at night when you're watching the West Coast games. And
yeah.
To follow the Rays and how good they've been the last few seasons. And, you know, to see how much better Arozarena becomes in the second full season, how Wander Franco develops in his first full season this year, to see how Shane McClanahan continues to develop as the ace of this staff with Tyler Glasnow hurt this year. You know, all these storylines with the Rays, you know, I'm excited for this season. And, look, The negotiations aren't going great between baseball and the players, and I fear that there are going to be some canceled games. I don't think it's going to go long, but I think they've basically said if by early next week there's no deal, games will be canceled, and they're not making them up. So
yeah.
We may not get 162 this year. I'm hopeful it's 150 or somewhere in that number at least. So.
Yeah, I am too, and I hope we miss none of them, but right now even I miss it. I think we should be, you know, reading stories about pitchers and catchers, games starting, all of that stuff.
First games were supposed to be today, I believe, in spring training.
Yeah, there's a void already, you know. I mean, because you can only fill it so much, right, with talk of free agency. I know the NCAA basketball tournament's coming up, March Madness.
That's going to be a fun tournament this year, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much parity in college basketball right now.
Hey, speaking of basketball, guess who's going to be covering the SEC basketball tournament with my partner, Joey Knight?
Well, since you said my partner.
Yeah, moi. I'm headed back to the hard court. How many points do you get when you shoot it behind the stripe? Is that three now? I don't even know. It's been a while. But
how many steps basketball. Do you get to take before they call traveling?
Yeah, as many as you can get away with. They don't even call it anymore. And the SEC is loaded, by the way. It's weird. It used to be a football conference, right? Now it's all basketball. They got a bunch of ranked teams.
It just means more, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It just means more. Good point. There's also racing this weekend. That's also going on here. The 18th Annual Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete presented by RP Funding. It's happening today through the 27th. For race information and tickets, go visit gpstpete.com. Got a busy weekend, of course, of racing and everything else. We'll be back to talk about it on Monday. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.